Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Women of Golf. I'm your host, Ted Oderico, and, of course, joining me is probably one of the hardest working women in golf today, my co-host, LPGA professional, Cindy Miller. Cindy, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Ted. Welcome to everyone.
Yeah, that's another Tuesday morning. We're already two-thirds of the way through May and getting ready to, right around the corner, coming into June and hitting into the summer months. Everybody's getting ready to play some great golf, hopefully, in the next few weeks. But, Cindy, let's very quickly, let me just remind everybody, of course, we're live every Tuesday morning on the Women of Golf, Cindy and I, starting at 9 a.m. Eastern time, running right through to 10 a.m. And you can get us on blogtalkradio.com. And just type in Women of Golf up in the search key, and you can get right to our show, or you can just go to the direct link. And don't forget, if you want to talk with Cindy or I or any of the guests that are on the program, you can do so by calling into area code 347-945-5855. And if you have any questions, you can email the program directly at womenofgolf@gmail.com. Cindy, let's just very quickly remind everybody who we are. I'll let you go first, ladies first.
Well, I'm an LPGA professional who played on the LPGA Tour for 3 years in the early 80s. I have been teaching the game of golf to people from all different skill levels since 1985. And I currently compete on the Legends Tour, which is the official senior tour of the LPGA Tour, and I reside in Buffalo, New York. I was fortunate enough to be voted as the LPGA National Teacher of the Year in 2010, and my husband and I are both former tour players, and we love helping people learn how to play the game better.
Perfect. And, of course, I'm Ted Oderico, and I host another program, Golf Talk Live, Thursday evenings, and I'm also a member of the United States Golf Teachers Federation. I teach golf as well, and I love working with a lot of my corporate clients, who primarily is the area that I target, but I certainly do teach people of all skill levels as well, and I've played this great game since I was probably about the age of 7 when I first took up the game with my father, and been playing this great game, and I turned 50 this past March, so that gives you an idea of how long I've been playing this game, and certainly have not played competitively on the tour, but I have played in a number of different corporate events and tournaments when I was back home in Canada, and unfortunately I don't get to play as much as I used to because I'm too busy with so many other things, but glad that you're tuning into the show, and Cindy, we wanted to bring part two of a series that you brought to us last week, Own Your Game. We're going to talk about that in just a minute here. But also we want to let everybody know that a little bit later in the broadcast, Barb Moxness is going to be joining us as well. So stick around, and Cindy, let's get started. Let's sort of lead into this this second segment, if you can.
Well, again, on all my years of being on the practice team with my students, the number one thing that they are looking for typically is consistency. And, again, consistency in my definition would be boring or doing the same thing over and over again. And when
right.
they come in and they hit a couple shots, they say to me, well, why did do that? Or why did the ball not go in the air? Why did the ball pop up? Why did the ball go right? Why did the ball go left? So I thought today we should make it clear that the ball only goes where the club points. And the only
right.
thing that touches the ball is the club face. So what I first show my students is what a square club face looks like. And, again, we're not visual today, so it's going to be hard to explain it, but let's pretend we've got an iron and we've got an iron face right behind the golf ball. There are grooves, which are horizontal lines on the face that help the ball get airborne. And then at the end of the grooves, there's two vertical lines. And those two vertical lines help the face line up parallel to where you want the ball to go.
Right.
You could also use the bottom leading edge of the club with the bottom groove being perpendicular to your target line. So the square face is very, very important. Most people have no idea, especially beginners. No one has ever shown them what a square club face looks like. So if the face is not square, you can't get upset if the ball doesn't go straight because you don't know what straight looks like.
Right.
Again, realizing that, you know, I have never met anyone, and I've given thousands and thousands of golf lessons, I've never met anyone who tries to miss the ball on purpose. So it is my assumption that if I were able to show them or shed some light on some of the things that cause the ball to do what it does, that they can be in control and fix that. And that would be the mission. So I show them immediately, this is what a square club face looks like, and our mission is to start the face square, swing it to the top of your backswing, and bring it back to square. Any way you need to do that, that's what needs to happen.
Right, and you know, I think one of the misconceptions in golf is everyone is under the illusion that you have to have a picture-perfect swing, but really that's not the case. I mean, you know, we can cite probably 100 golfers over the years that have not had what people would judge today as the perfect-looking swing, but they knew how to get that club face square to the ball when it was time through impact. And that's really what the end goal is. You know, if you want to loop it around six times, it doesn't really matter as long as that club face comes square at impact.
Correct.
Right, and I think that that's something that a lot of people are focusing too much on trying to make the swing look perfect and not enough time on trying to make, you know, solid contact and squaring that club face at impact. So one of the things that you want to do, of course, Cindy, is you want to answering the question why.
Okay, so the ball cannot go straight if the face isn't square. So why did the ball go crooked? Because the face was not straight. And then you might say, well, why wasn't the face straight? Well, there could be a myriad of answers to that. I liken the swing to a pendulum. And if mm-hmm. you were holding the club dangling in front of you and you didn't move the grip and you just started the club swinging and kept the grip stable, the club head would swing like a pendulum or the little tick-tock thing on the grandfather clock. Well,
right.
if the grip is stable and only the head is swinging, then the head will come back to the same place each time.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be called consistent. And if you've ever seen the machine they use, the Byron Nelson.
Iron Byron?
Yeah. So the Iron Byron is what they use and all the ball manufacturing companies and club companies mm-hmm. to test balls out. And if you Google it, you can see it. And it says in there that they have to change the sod every year in a 4-foot square from where all the balls land in a 4-foot square.
Wow.
So again, that would define consistent, right? If Iron
right.
Byron ball in the same place, and Iron Byron's legs don't move. It's only the hands, wrists, and arms.
Right.
So, again, I believe that your hands, wrists, and arms control the face, and your body supports you swinging of the arms. It doesn't mean your body's not going to move. Your body's going to move in response to what you're doing with the club.
Right.
So, why does the ball go crooked? Because the face isn't square. Well, why isn't the face square? Typically, what I see is most people move their body too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason they do that is because they've probably been told they have to keep their head down, their left arm straight, shift their weight, chin to shoulders, hit the ball, follow through. Well, if they try to shift their weight and turn their shoulders, that handle of the grip and the pendulum visual is going to move all over the place. and the bottom of the arc is not going to be consistent, and the face is not going to be square. So the body's going to move ahead of where the ball is, and if the body moves ahead and the grips gets to the ball first, the face is going to be open, and if the face is open, where will the ball go? To the right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that sounds
right.
Very confusing, and it would be easier if we could visually show that, but the face isn't square because the grip got there first. And the grip got there first because the body moved. So if the body stays stable and you allow the hands, wrists, and arms to swing the face back and forth, the face will come back square. Now, why would the ball go left? Well, the face is shut. Do you have a question?
Well, and no, not so much a question, but I think that that's, you know, when you look at most specifically amateur golfers, you know, you see a lot of lateral body movement, and which ultimately causes either the hands to get too far ahead, as you said, or sometimes depending on how they're shifting their weight, is, you know, the hands will outrace and shut the club down. So, you know, and we do see a lot, especially amateur golfers, you see with a lot of body movement, and I think that causes, and this obviously, of course, leads to the question, why do I miss shots? Well, that's one of the ways that a lot of golfers miss shots. What are some of the other ways that you see that the average golfers?
Well, again, if the face is closed, sometimes the amateur golfer will not allow the face to open or the arms to swing freely on the way back. If you swing the club head back freely, the face will open or be vertical halfway back, if you will. If it's not, that face is closed and the ball will go left. So
mm-hmm.
I start people out doing little tiny baby chip shot swings just to feel a square club face. The second thing that can cause the ball not to go as well as it is, you know, possible, is that they don't hit a clean shot. And there are different ways. You can hit it fat. You can hit it clean.
Yep.
You can hit it thin. You can top it, and you can whip it.
Yep.
So there's five different things of where the club comes back down. So square face, okay, instead of open or closed, three things.
Mm.
Where's the face pointed? Square, open, or closed. And then how does the club face come back to the ground? Fat, clean, thin, top, or whiff? Now, you need to be aware that everyone misses shots. Everyone.
Yep.
Everyone, everyone, everyone. So tour players are very aware of what they've done with the club, and they can adapt and recover.
Mm-hmm.
Most amateurs are not aware of what they've done. Therefore, they can't recover. Therefore, it becomes a spiral meltdown. Or it can become a spiral meltdown.
Right, and it becomes a guessing game. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it's, you know, rake and hit, search and scan. Oh, my God, what am I doing? And then it's freak out, and then you're done.
Right.
And anybody that's played golf has, you know, unfortunately experienced that. And I probably more than most. But that's why it's so important to me, and I'm so passionate about helping people because, again, I'm not trying to miss it. Are you trying to miss it? No. Well, let's figure out why the ball did what it did. So number one thing is you have to realize who's holding the club.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm the only one that's holding the club. I may allow someone's advice to, you know, interfere or influence what I'm thinking, but that's my fault.
Right.
So, again, you need to be very clear about what's going on in your head and what you do when you try to swing the club and make it come back to square and clean. So if you lock your arms and keep them very straight, which some pros say, you've got to keep your left arm straight. Do not bend your wrist. Well, if you lock your arms, you're going to hit the ball fast because
yep.
your hands are going to get there first. And the club is not going to brush ground or hit behind it at all. Okay, so what happens then is if you keep your arm straight, you're going to hit it fat. Then you're going to hurt your arm. Then your subconscious mind is going to say, wow, that hurt. I don't want to hit the ground anymore. note to self, don't dig to China. So then what happens is you flinch, and you'll flinch, and you'll pull away from it, and then you'll hit it thin. So if fat and thin come from not allowing the club head to go back to the bottom of its arc, and the only way it's going to go back to the bottom of its arc is if your hands, wrists, and arms are relaxed.
Right.
So, again, you know, when I play in tournaments, I am very aware of myself, and I am very aware of when I get nervous. So what I do is I put my arms real close to me, and I walk over to some grass, and I do what I call hairy, sweaty armpit practice swings. And so I pretend I'm sweating like a pig, and I haven't shaved my armpits in a long time, and I brush the grass back and forth, and I just allow the club to hit the bottom of the arc. Instead of digging, I'm brushing. So anytime I'm nervous, I will do this little hairy, sweaty armpit practice swing. The club brushes the ground because I'm aware that I'm nervous. Now, most people aren't even aware of what they're thinking, which will make the fight-or-flight syndrome happen, which makes your palms sweaty, which makes your breathing shallow. Again, total awareness of yourself, and that's what needs to happen, so that you can brush ground and hit the face, you know, have the club face come back to the ground clean. So the perfect shot would be a square club face clean with speed. And the second or the third component of this is you want the face to be square, you want the club to come back down clean, and you want it to do it quickly with some speed, which will generate power. And now if your body's moving and your arm is stiff, there's no way you're going to have any power. So you've got to allow the club head to swing, which means you need to relax your arms, hands, and wrists. Keep your fingers on the club and allow the club head to swing back and forth. So really, it's so easy, but it's what is the preconceived notion and idea that you're trying to do. I liken it, you know, when a student comes in and they're hitting it fat and dead right and then thin, I say, look, your picture is skewed. You have been told the five old wives' tales your whole life. Keep your head down, your arms straight, shift your weight, turn your shoulders.
Right.
Hit the ball and follow through. We need to help you realize that that picture is not correct. And clearly, the ball is not reacting the way you want it to. So when they become aware of that and I show them how relaxed, they're like, wow, I'm not even trying. Well, if you've ever been to an LPGA Tour event, and if you haven't, I suggest you go and you sit on the practice tee for 20 minutes. And the first thing after you close your mouth from your mouth hanging open will be, holy cow, they don't even look like they're trying, and look how far the ball goes. Would you agree?
Yeah, and that's true. And I've been to both LPGA and, of course, PGA events, and it's true. It's effortless. And this really brings in, you know, to a question, Cindy, that I think a lot of people sort of fall, especially, obviously, the amateurs, is why am I a better player or better on the range than on the course? You know, and that sort of poses that question. Why are a lot of amateur? I mean, you and I know the answer to that, but for those tuning into the program, why are most amateurs better on the range than they are in the course?
Well, I think they're more relaxed on the range. They're probably not focused on the target. They're just letting it rip, and they're not paying attention. And when you do that, there's good news in that, because that's your right brain just allowing you to swing freely. When you get on the course, you know, the left brain kicks in and says, all right, don't mess this up. Don't hit in the bunker. You know, and when you do that, your left brain is overactive, and that locks up your muscles, and your right brain can't work, and you're trying too hard, and nothing's going to work. So if we go back to the range scenario and say, okay, well, why am I hitting it so good? What I tell my students, we hold these things called perfect practice sessions. And they're an hour, and we hold them four times a week. And people can come in and just hit balls, and we're there to help them get back on track if they happen to fall off. And so I say to them, what are you doing right now? Are you aware? Are you even focused or noticing what you're doing? How tight are you holding the club? Are your arms relaxed? Are you just brushing the ground? Or are you digging the china? Again, if you're not aware of what you're doing, you cannot be upset if you're not consistent, because consistent is doing the same thing over and over again. And to be able to do the same thing over and over again, you need to know what you're doing.
Right.
So if you're not aware of what you're doing and you don't have a process, you have no right to get upset. So what I do with people is I say, okay, let's develop a pre-shot routine so that your brain knows what the plan is each time, and then you can react to the shot and not think so much. So there's a fine line and a balance between left brain and right brain. And you need to know what you're doing, and then you need to give it over to that right brain so the right brain can react and produce a shot. So, again, there's a balance. You need to know when to turn on the thinker and when to let the doer do what it needs to do.
Right. You know, I think back, and, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking back to when I first started playing golf, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, at a very early age. And, of course, my father was the one that took me out, and he was a very accomplished golfer. And, you know, as he was sort of building my swing and getting me to, you know, to learn how to, you know, hit the ball well, one of the things that he would always have me do, of course, is take a couple of practice swings. And he would always... You know, and then, I, of course, you know, as a youngster, you get up there and you're all over the place. And he'd say, you know, your practice swings are perfect. But when you get over the ball, he says, something happens and suddenly they're not so perfect. And he said, what you need to do is you need to be relaxed like you are during your practice swing when you address the ball. And it was something that took me a little while to catch on to. And, of course, quite a while, but nevertheless, it eventually happened. But I think a lot of tension, and as you say, a lot of anxiety sort of creeps in because people overthink. They're used to, as you say, the sort of the five old wives' tales, and they get too much thought process going in when they get over the ball. But when they're at the range or when they're, you know, taking practice swings, there is no thought process. They're just sort of swinging the club. And if they could somehow, if we could find a way to marry the two, if you will, I think people would have a much easier time playing golf. Would you agree?
I absolutely agree. I think there is too much try. So I don't believe there's try when they're practice swinging. They're allowing the club to flow freely. So, again, there's two schools of thought. I have been with teachers who tell the student to focus on the target. And I'm a bit of a control freak. And when I try to focus on the target, when I'm standing over the ball, I try to steer the ball to the target personally.
Yeah.
And that is never a good thing. So
no.
I personally have to have a silly little right brain mantra, if you will. And this would go back to, are you audio, visual, or kinesthetic? And so, again, how can I learn to own my game? Well, the first thing you have to do is look in the mirror and realize who's holding the club. And when you realize who's holding the club, what can we measure? Well, I first ask my students, if we were going to go somewhere that you've never been before and you cannot use GPS and you don't know where you're going, do you want me to tell you how to get there? Do you want to read written directions, or do you want to look at a map? And they go, what do you mean? And I said, well, tell me, you know, which way you want to learn. Tell you how to get there, look at a map, or read written directions. So they say, oh, well, I want to read written directions. Well, that means they're a feeler. Okay?
Yep.
So we need to, if they say, tell me how to get there, and they're an audio. If they say, show me, they're a visual. So what I say to them, let's say someone's an audio learner. Well, let's take some practice swings, and let's have a little mantra. One and two and swing and slap through. Whatever, some kind of little mantra when you're standing over the ball making a swing to help your guide your tempo and your timing. Also, what it does is it lets your brain, you're controlling what your brain is thinking. Because if you don't control what your brain is thinking, you're going to stand over the ball, and this little gerbil is going to go, don't hit it in the bunker. And then you're going to go, what? Who said that? You know, who is this guy talking to me? And so, you know, be careful. You always blow this. You're not comfortable. You should walk away. And so it's like, wow, where did this person come from? So in my opinion, you know, there are many other opinions out there, but in my opinion, you need to be telling your brain what it's thinking. Because if you don't, this little gerbil is going to show up and start yapping at you. So if that would come back to knowing what you're doing and being aware
right.
of what your routine is and being able to create and react to a shot using your right brain so that you can pull it off. A lot of times, too, if I have students that are having trouble, we have a lot of students that are competing and juniors and stuff, and I tell them we need to have a fairway finder. So when your left brain gets in over control mode and you're, oh, my God, you're doing this, it's like, stop. Just be quiet. And your fairway finder might be just a little half-swing bunt that you can bunt down the fairway, that you absolutely know what you're doing, and that will help relax you because it's an emotional, physiologically attack on you, this fight or flight. Everything locks up. Your palms get sweaty. You know, you might shake. I can remember teeing off at the U.S. Open in Nashville, and I had to make a certain amount of money to keep my card. And I had played in, this was my fifth U.S. Open, I think. So it was like, wasn't the first time. And, of course, it was 120 degrees in Nashville, and the USGA officials all had on, you know, dress shirts with ties and blue sports coats, and none of them were sweating. And I'm sweating like a pig, and I get on the first tee, and they say, you know, Cindy Kessler, that was my maiden name, play away.
Right.
And I got over the ball, and all of a sudden I felt the slab on my right knee shaking. So, and I thought, wow, my right knee fat is shaking. And then I thought, well, I didn't even know I had fat on my right knee, right? And I'm trying to hit a tee shot on the first hole of the U.S. Open. So I walked away, you know, I backed away, and then I said, come on, stop. You got to get control over what's going on here. And I did, and I eventually made the cut in that one. In fact, it's the only cut I ever made in the U.S. Open. But you need to be aware that your subconscious mind is there to protect you. And sometimes it's your friend, and sometimes it's not. And if you are aware, you can take control over that, and you can learn to play under pressure.
Very well said. And on that note, Cindy, I see that that Barb is ready to go here. I think it would be a good idea to continue this conversation. I know that you have some questions lined up for her that really on the topic of owning your game. So why don't we bring Barb on, if that's all right with you, and
I would love
we'll
to bring Barb on.
We'll
Barb
continue the conversation.
Barb is my buddy. I met Barb Moxness. Wow, I think it's 30 years ago. I met Barb Moxness 30 years ago when we played on the LPGA tour together, and there's two of my favorite people in the world, Barb Moxness and my husband Alan Miller. And one of the things that I admired about them is the way they floated along the golf course, and they looked like they were in total control and in peace when they played golf. And I, on the other hand, was a whacked out speed demon. But Barb Moxness played on the LPGA Tour. She's married to Mark Moxness. They have two beautiful sons. She's a top teacher for Golf Digest magazine, one of the top 50 teachers. She's number 4 on the Legends Tour point list, and she has just authored a book called Golf from the Inside Out. She is one of my dear friends forever. Please welcome Barb Moxness.
Good morning.
Hi, honey.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be
here. Good morning,
Barb.
Well, good morning and welcome
to
Women of Golf. We're glad to have you. Barb, I don't know if you had an opportunity to listen to any of the first part of the show, but Cindy has brought in a series called Own Your Game, which we started last week on the show, and we were just sort of talking about part two, if you will, today on the first part. I know that Cindy had some questions that she wanted to ask you along that line about owning your game. So, Cindy, go ahead and let's go. Let's start the show off.
Okay, Barb, what we were talking about is why do I miss shots and why does ball go crooked and why do I not hit it clean? And so what I would like to know from you, because you are one of my mentors and I love you dearly, what is the one lesson you have learned in all your playing experience that you absolutely must do personally for you to own your game while you're playing?
Well, I did have a chance to listen a little bit to what you're saying, and it where I come from is along the same lines that you were talking about, because what I try and do is try and be an athlete, to play the game and not to think, to not be mechanical, but to react to what I'm seeing, because the brain is so powerful and we need to tap into it as an athlete. And that's what I learned a number of years ago, how to do that, which really propelled my game to another level. So I have a little phrase that I use to just kind of encapsulate all of that, and I just go, see it, feel it, and then just do it. And when I do that, it takes me out of the left brain thinking, which is the one that shuts your whole neuromotor system down. And one of the things that I learned from my mentor is that when you're in your left brain thinking, your neuromotor system works at 3 to 4 meters per second. When you're in your right brain athleticism and the athletic brain, your neuromotor system works at 125 meters per second. So you can actually think faster than your body can move when you're in the left brain, which you don't want to do. It shuts everything down. You want to be in the right brain where you can just reactively be that athlete, just playing any other game like tennis or baseball or basketball or whatever. It's always reactive. That's where we want to stay when we play the game. So that's always what I try and do, just see it, feel it, and do it.
How long has it taken you to learn this?
Well, I was fortunate. I actually I left the tour in 1986 when our kids were young, and I was so frustrated because I really felt like I was a better athlete. I mean, I played basketball at Arizona State. I was a starting guard in the basketball team. I played other sports and was really good at everything, and I get to golf, and I'm like, what's holding you back? So I was fortunate that I met a guy by the name of A.J. Bonar and in Carlsbad. He came up to me on a driving range one day, and he changed my life in half an hour because he changed the paradigm of what I was doing from trying to create a mechanical golf swing to learning to play the game. And he just looked at me and he said, what if you just take the club and hit the ball off to the right? Or if you just take the club and hit the ball off to the left? And I started doing that, and I realized, wow, I could be an athlete playing the game. But then he taught me how the brain works. And one of the things that it's so important to understand is that 42% of our brain is directly to our hands when we're an athlete. So if I, and only 10% is your body, the large muscle skills, large muscle groups. So if I go into my body and look at my body and what my body's doing, I've actually shut my brain down to the point where I can't be an athlete. When I learned that fact, then I could take control of the golf club and start to hit shots instead of trying to mechanically manufacture something with my body. So I took those ideas that AJ and I learned and he taught me, and I started playing with those. And the very next round I went out, I hadn't played a competitive round in 2 years, and I went and shot 67 my next round.
Holy cow.
Wow.
It was like, whoa, this is what I've been looking for. And so since that time, I've taught it to my students, and I've continued this process for myself. And even though I'm 61 now, I play better golf than when I was in my 20s and 30s because I'm tapping into my brain properly and allowing myself to be an athlete.
Wow.
So it makes
and
golf
that,
fun. Huh? Sorry.
That what inspired you to write your book, Golf from the Inside Out?
Yeah, it really did, because I consider this book a book of redemption, really, because I knew where I was before, and I saw my students and where they were and what was happening and their frustration, and they looked at every golf magazine, and they got all these lessons, and they still didn't get any better. And so decluttering things for them, I wanted other people to understand the concepts so that they could do that for themselves. And so that was kind of the thought behind the book. It was a story of me and where I came from and what I learned and where I went to, and learning to declutter and simplify golf in three ways, one from a physical, one from a psychological, and then from a spiritual perspective, all three working together so that we can be the athlete that we really are.
So I think, let me just,
go
ahead, Cindy. Well,
no,
I was just going to add in there,
ahead.
I think one of the things that it sort of raises a valid point, Barb, is this. I think when we're younger, we're absorbing so much information, but as we age and become a little more mature, we're able to manage those thoughts more effectively. And I think that's why, you know, as we grow older and mature, we're able to understand some of the mistakes that we make along the way and become, as you said, a better athlete. You know, for instance, mm-hmm. you look at a lot of the young players, especially I'm going to say with the male, the men's tours, they're more into the power game. It's about how far they can hit it and that sort of thing, and they're not really managing their games as effectively. But as you see them sort of get seasoned throughout their careers, you see them starting to manage their games a little bit more. They're starting to realize that, you know, the power game is not really where it's at. It might win them the odd tournament, but it's not going to keep them consistent out there. And so you kind of see that, and I think that's really where a lot of golfers are when they're first taking up the game, is that they get so cluttered with so much information, whether it be on their own or watching others or even from instruction, and they don't know how to properly manage it effectively, and quite often end up, you know, struggling through the game. So you're right. Understanding golf from the inside out, I think, is what we need to be teaching the students today.
Yeah, and you know, it's more than just managing a physical game, too. I think it's teaching mm-hmm. golfers to manage themselves. Like Cindy was talking about, I heard a little bit of the thing she, you know, the subconscious and all the emotions and all the thoughts that are going on. I mean, you have to be really aware of those things mm-hmm. and how you're treating yourself. One of the things that I found out as I walked away from the tour and looked back at it is how much I hated myself for the performance
yeah.
that I had. And I had to deal with myself and get through those things so that I could be not only at peace with myself, but that works into your golf game as well. So it's kind of a whole, real holistic picture of managing who we are.
Right. Well, I think that old saying comes into play, if I knew then what I know now, you know, I think if we all sort of had that, you know, thought process, you know, 20, 30 years ago and had the knowledge. But, you know, that's what happens as we, you know, progress through life. We learn from our past experiences and we make adjustments accordingly. But it would be nice if we could learn them a little sooner in life, and it would probably alleviate a lot of the frustrations that we have along the way. Cindy, go ahead.
And frankly, that's one of the reasons that I did write the book, because I didn't want people to have to go through some of the things that I went through, and to simplify it
right.
for them so that they could learn the lessons, you know. Sorry, Cindy, go ahead.
Right.
No, that's absolutely the truth. And again, how many kids are out there trying to compete in this game? And I have a story of a young girl. Her dad was in with her sister the other day for a lesson. And I said, well, how has her sister done? And he said, well, she just played in a tournament in Ohio. And I said, oh, great, how'd she do? Well, guess what she had on the 18th tee box? She had 71, and guess what she shot? And I said, what? And he said, 78. And I said, holy cow, that's awesome. She broke 80 in a tournament. This is a big deal. The girl is a sophomore in high school, and she really wants to play in college. He goes, yeah, but guess what she had? I said, hey, Daddy-O, listen to me. I wanted to slap him. I said,
yeah.
Do you realize what a good thing that is? She broke a barrier no matter what she had on the last hole. And if you don't pat her on the back, she's not going to love
yeah.
you. You
yeah.
are killing this girl. I just,
yeah.
so how many kids out there really have this terrible vision of themselves because they don't perform up to expectations of someone else? It's
mm-hmm.
it's like we're killing people.
Yeah, we are. And it's my firm belief that everything we go through is a learning experience. And if we can look back at it and go, what did I learn from that? Then we progress further. But if we sit back and just beat ourselves up over what we did, we never learn anything, so we never do go forward.
Absolutely. So if you had two simple nuggets for our listeners that you would like to share on what they could do to change their game so they can play golf from the inside out, what would those two nuggets be?
I think the first one would be to believe in your God-given athletic skills, which are already there. I think a lot of golfers mm-hmm. walk in and they think they lack something. Everybody has athleticism. Everybody has a right brain. Everybody has their eye-hand coordination and those kinds of things, their spatial awareness and all those things. They're already there. Our goal is really to believe into it and to tap into those skills like you've been talking about, to stay in the right brain athleticism and athletic mode. And when you do that, you find some wonderful skills that are there that come out. The other thing that I would say is to make golf a game and to make it simple.
Mm-hmm.
You have a golf club in your hand, and I have a little phrase in my book which I wrote, which is golf is simply reactively hitting the ball with a golf club toward an intended target. It's simply taking a golf club and hitting a golf ball towards an intended target. That's a game. That's like shooting a free throw at a basket. That's like hitting a tennis ball across the net. And if you do that, then you find joy and enjoyment in it, and you also find the athleticism comes out a lot easier that way. So it's all about simplifying and believing in what you have and what you can do.
That's great. And where can our listeners purchase your book, Barb?
It's available on Amazon.com, Golf from the Inside Out, and it has more of the principles I'm talking about in a little bit deeper depth than what we're mm-hmm. talking about today. But had some great success with that one lady, read the book, and the next round she played, she dropped 21 shots.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Barb, can I get you to send me a copy? I was going to say, if I could even drop half of that, I'd be happy. That's fantastic. Wow.
Yeah, it just confirms to me that everybody is an athlete. And women particularly don't believe they are. But they have those athletic skills already there, and all they need to do is tap into them. So the book kind of tells you how to do that.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I'm going to shift states here a little bit. You've recently been elected to the board of directors on our Legends Tour. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about our tour and what's in the works of trying to expand our tour so that we can play in more cities like the Champions Tour?
Yeah, we'd love to do that, wouldn't we?
Yes, we would.
The Legends Tour are LPGA professionals, mostly over 45 and over, and we're an unknown entity. I consider us to be kind of at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to tours, but we have all the Hall of Famers on our tour. We have wonderful players from actually the present LPGA, like Laura Davies and Lori Kane are playing on our tour, so we have a wonderful mix of talented, really personable, entertaining women that are there. And what we're trying to do on the board is we're trying to work with sponsors and find new sponsors and attract sponsors to use us as a vehicle where we can raise money and we can entertain and we can bring golf to the city of their choice. We're working to try and find new sponsors all over the country right now, and we're looking at really doing some work with charities and trying to raise money for charities. So we're doing a lot of work, actually, to expand what the tour is about, and hopefully your listeners can get a little taste of us. You can go to the Legends Tour, thelegendstour.com, to find out more information about who we are and to look up some of the players that are there and the events that are coming up in the next couple months. But hopefully your listeners can know that we're alive and we're well and we're trying to grow and we have a wonderful product to bring to the country.
So let's say that a city wanted to bring us in. What are the different opportunities that they could? Could they just do a pro-am? Let's say a city, you know, remembers the LPGA Tour, for example, I was in Corning yesterday,
mm-hmm.
raising money for the athletic department of the Corning Community College, and everyone in Corning loves the LPGA Tour. What could we do to go back to Corning?
Oh, wouldn't that be fun? I always love going
yes.
to Corning. There's several options for it, you know. And I think right now what we're trying to do as a board is we're trying to expand the options to work with sponsors to say, hey, what would you really like to do? And we'll work with you to bring that event to your area. So right now there's the one-day pro-am, there's a two-day pro-am and golf tournament, and then we'd have a pro-am and two-day golf tournament. So there's several options for people out there that they could look at. And each one would be at a different monetary level. But I think the goal for the Legends Tour is to be to bring significance to the lives of the women that are there, that we want to give back, that we want to be part
right.
of the communities and raise money and be a little more unique and different than some of the other tours that are out there, that we are more personable and more entertaining and can bring that to the event, whichever the sponsor wants.
Well, I can say from, let me just interject a thought here, I can say from a male's perspective that I say this with all sincerity, that I actually enjoy watching the LPGA tour events more so than I do the men's tour, and for a number of reasons. Something that I mentioned earlier, I've just found that the men's game has become, again, too much of a power game. And, you know, whereas there seems to be a much more thought process on the ladies' tours. And certainly I know a number of the seasoned players on the Legends Tour as well, like Nancy Lopez and some of the others that have been out there. I remember watching them as I was growing up when they were playing on the regular LPGA Tour. And there just seems it is a whole different brand. It truly is. And I find it a much more enjoyable event. I used to watch, when I was living back up in Canada, I used to go to the Des Moines Classic, and was one of the main events I used to see back home. And I always enjoyed it. So I think it's great that they've got the Legends Tour to bring some of these great athletes back. And I certainly, you know, can't think of a better product to bring to the market.
That's nice of you to say. It's nice to hear.
Well,
Barb,
I'm all about...
Else? Go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead, Cindy. No, go ahead, Cindy.
One of our charities on the Legends Tour is the LPGA USGA Girls Golf Club.
Mm-hmm.
And I am happen to be the director of the Buffalo chapter of the LPGA Girls Golf Club. And I absolutely love helping little girls, and one of the things we do is we go to the LPGA Wegmans championship each year, and we all dress alike, we have our little t-shirts on, and we go watch everybody hit balls, and it really, the tour players are so caring and giving, and I believe that it would be a great idea if we could have an LPGA Girls Golf Club pro-am, if you will, with the befores and the afters. So I'm just throwing an idea out there. If somebody wants to grab onto that, and we could find a sponsor who would like to support that, and we could help the women and the children in whatever city you live in and raise money for charity, I think it would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Legends Tour right now, by the way, has raised over $10 million for charity in the last, about 10 years.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool, too. With the small organization that we are, you know, we've done that kind of work already. So.
Well, it's great, too, that you know, your primary goal is to give back to the communities that have, you know, been so supportive over the years to many of your careers. And I think that's really, you know, says a lot about the integrity of the players. You know, to be able to give back is probably one of the greatest gifts that we can do in life, you know, as we learn and progress through life and enjoy successes. it's nice to be able to give back to those that have sort of been there along the way and followed our careers and so forth. So it's great that that's really a primary, you know, function of that the tour wants to do is to give back and certainly raise money for a variety of charities. And that's a fantastic, point really to make when advertising the Legends Tour. And I certainly hope that they're going to come. I'm, of course, living down in Florida now, so I'm hoping that they'll get a little bit closer. I know that they do have an event, I believe, down in Florida, do they not?
Yes, we have one in November at Delray down in southern Florida. So that'll be Legends Tour Championship in November, I think it is, first part of November.
Well, I'll have to make sure I pencil those dates in and come down and watch that, because I'm sure it'll be an exciting event. And Cindy, do you have any other things that you wanted to ask Barb before we get ready to wrap up?
Well, I'm going to go back to the golf lesson in the book. Barb, can you tell our listeners where you're at in case someone wants to come and see you and learn in person how to play golf from the inside out?
Yes, I'm predominantly down at Black Diamond Ranch in Florida, which is about an hour north of Tampa. I'm down there from October through the first part of May. And right now I'm up in Minnesota, as I call it, and I'll be up here most of the summer. So they can get a hold of me there. Or they can go to my website, which is moxiegolfacademy.com, and check out, what's there and how to get a hold of me through that. One other thing I'd like to say about the Legends Tour, if I can,
sure.
We are, it's kind of funny for me actually, we are a group that gives back, but we're also still very competitive. Would you agree, Cindy?
That's an understatement.
You know, we all go to the practice team, we look at each other, and then we go to the first team, we go, I'm going to beat this person. And so,
yeah, it doesn't matter how old you are. That burn doesn't leave, does it?
No, it's really kind of fun.
Holy cow.
Now, let me ask, I'm going to ask a question of actually the two of you, and Barb, since you are our guest, I'll let you respond first. But on that same train of thought, do you ever do anything, whether it be on the practice tee and that, to kind of, and I don't want to use the word psych one another out because that's not really a great way to put it, but do you ever, to try and get that competitive edge, do you kind of do things to have a little fun and maybe play with one another when you're out on the golf course just to see if you can get that competitive edge? Do you ever do that?
I don't consciously ever try and influence someone else's play. I think as I've gotten older, I'm probably more of an encourager than anything because I know how hard it can be, especially as we get older. So I don't know that I've ever really tried to influence someone that way. I'm more focused on what I need to do, and then, what they need to do happens.
Right. Cindy?
Cindy, how about you?
Oh, I have been paired with a couple people in different tournaments, and the funny thing is that each time that I was paired with there were different people. And I've been accused of being like the golden retriever multi-poo, and I'm typically pretty friendly and nice and very encouraging. In fact, I played with this woman in Phoenix a couple weeks ago, and I played terrible, and she goes, I love playing with you. I play so good when I play with you. I said, oh, shut up. Just shut up. I've had enough of you. And so, I'm typically very nice and friendly, and so twice I was paired with two different people, and it was almost a delayed intelligence attack, and I thought, they're messing with me. And I was like clueless, and then when I figured it out, I thought, I can't believe you're doing that. And I didn't say anything to them, and then my thought was, holy cow, I have to protect everyone else from you. I have to kick your butt because you're a creep. And so I was so mad that someone was actually messing with me that I played so well because I was ticked off. So I liken it to me going into my pursuit mode instead of my protect, my protect mode is be careful, look out. You know, that's the clenched butt cheeks play, and that doesn't work.
Right.
But it's funny because I made the most money in two tournaments that I've ever made in my life. One was winning the LPGA National Teaching Championship. I made $13,000. Second one was finishing second in the Legends Tour event where I made $33,500, and I was protecting the field against the person I was playing with.
I mean, I guess
yeah,
I do that every week.
Yeah, I should. And so I have tried to tick myself off on purpose. But anyway, in fact, Barb and I did play a practice round, and we had a little match with two of our competitors, and they kicked our butts last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
but
they did.
Yeah. But,
they did. But
well,
know, everybody played well. They just happened to play a little better.
Yes.
Chalk that up as to another learning experience. Barb, let me just throw one more quick question on the line of what we were just talking about. Something that you had said earlier that, you know, there was a point in time when you started to sort of understand how things worked more on the inside. Was there a specific sort of aha moment in your career or in your life where you sort of came to the realization, okay, and a switch sort of, was there a defining moment, or was it just sort of, again, over time that it just sort of came to you, or was there a specific time in your career that you sort of had a revelation that, okay, I've got to start working more on the inside or focusing more on the inside?
Well, the initial point was when I saw physically what I could do, and then I looked at myself and I was home with my kids and I thought, you know what, you're not really very happy right now and you're not really functioning very well. You need to start dealing with yourself. It affected me physically, actually. I'm a very sensitive, physically sensitive person, and my emotions started to affect me physically, so I had to start dealing with them. And so I did, and then it just continued to kind of move forward, and I eventually went back to college and got my degree in psychology because it impacted me so much. So that's one of the things that I do use when I teach.
Very good. Well, Barb, we want to thank you for spending some time with us here on the Women of Golf this morning and sharing some of your thoughts and inputs. And we want to wish you much continued success. And I'll be looking for my copy of Golf from the Inside Out so I can drop 21 strokes in my game. I'll be looking for that coming in the mail real quick. That's a phenomenal. That's just incredible. I mean, that's. I don't think in all of the years, and I've heard a lot of different things, I don't think I've ever heard anything as exciting as that for somebody to drop their strokes by that many in such a short period of time by simply reading a book. I've got to get my hot little hands on a copy of that book.
And I'll tell you, it's overwhelming to me what's happened with this book. To see people's lives changed. I had a woman who had the yips so bad for 10 years. She read the book. She just won two tournaments. And so those stories are out there. I mean, they continue to come back to me of what's happening to this book. So it's very overwhelming, and it's wonderful to see these lives changed. So
fantastic.
Thank you so
Cindy,
much for having me on, guys. It was a pleasure, my dear friend Cindy, and I hope someday that I can meet you in person, Ted. So thank you.
Now that I know that you're just an hour north of Tampa, I'm actually up in Panama City Beach, Florida, so we're not that far away. So I may take a little road trip and come and visit you now that I know where you are in the fall months. But, Cindy, go ahead if you want to continue.
Barb, again,
thank
you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time to be on our program. For those of you interested, please go to Amazon.com and purchase Golf from the Inside Out by Barb Moxness. It's Moxness. And again, Barb, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. It was great.
All right. You have a great day. Thank you, Barb.
Thank you.
Okay. Just got a moment here, and we just wanted thank the listeners once again for tuning in this week on the Women of Golf. And Cindy and I want to take this opportunity to, again, thank all of you for tuning in. And we look forward to having you join us each Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here on blogtalkradio.com, the Women of Golf. And next week, Cindy, we're going to have another continuation to the Own Your Game series, part three, if you will. Cindy will be bringing that to us, and hopefully we'll have another great guest to join us as well. But in the meantime, once again, thank you for tuning in to Women of Golf, and we look forward to having you join us right back right here next week on the Women of Golf. Thanks, and have a great week, everybody. And Cindy, much continued success this week, and I will talk to you very shortly.
Thanks. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks.